Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest, Ambassador Sam Brownback. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Sam Brownback. Sam served as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, 1995 to 96, and of the U.S. Senate, 1996 to 2011, before becoming governor of Kansas, 2011 to 2018. He later served as ambassador at large for international religious freedom, 2018 to 2021, in the administration of President Donald J. Trump. He was raised on his family farm near Parker, Kansas. He graduated from Kansas State University, where he was student body president in 1978 and received a law degree from the University of Kansas in 1982. After graduating from law school, Brownback worked as an attorney in Manhattan, Kansas, for 4 years before turning to public service. He was appointed Secretary of the State Board of Agriculture in 1986, a position he held until 1993, and he was a White House Fellow in 1990. In 1994, Brownback was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives as part of the Gingrich Revolution landslide that gave the Republicans a majority after 40 years in the minority. After Kansas, Senator Bob Dole resigned his position to campaign for the presidency in 1996, Brownback won a special election to fill the vacant seat by running on a strongly conservative platform. He was easily reelected in 1998 and 2004, in the latter election garnering the highest number of votes for any office in Kansas history. Wow. During his tenure as senator, he was a member of the Senate's Appropriations and Judiciary Committee, and served on the Joint Economic Committee and on the Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe. His political philosophy is outlined in his book, From Power to Purpose, A Remarkable Journey of Faith and Compassion, 2007. In 2008, he launched a bid to become governor of Kansas. He won the Republican primary and went on to an easy victory in the November 2010 gubernatorial election. Brownback was sworn in as governor in January 2011. President Trump nominated Senator Brownback as ambassador at large for international religious freedom, where he served until Trump's term ended in 2021. Hello, Ambassador. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. I'm kind of embarrassed how long that resume was. I've been around a while and I've gotten to do a few things, so it's all nice.
Glad very to join distinguished.
The show, and I love your backdrop.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That came from youramericanflagstore.com, promo code MCView. But I'm glad that you're here with us today. Thank you for taking time out to speak to me. Which do you prefer, ambassador or senator?
I don't know. I mean, ambassador's most recent title, senator was a title. I really enjoyed that job, but I gave a term limits pledge and I said I'd only serve two full terms. And so I did. But you usually go by your current title, and my current title is grandpa.
Grandpa, okay.
Yeah, I got 9 grandchildren. So yeah, I guess that's the grandpa would be the right title to give me right now.
Okay, very cool. Well, I have this question to start. My working thesis for this show has been, and still is, Donald Trump was the fourth phase of the conservative movement, which is why the Ted Kennedy, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi far left hates him with the heat of 1,000 suns. First, it was Goldwater, culminating in Ronald Reagan's presidency. Second was you and the Gingrich Revolution in 1995. Same day, Senator of Alabama Richard Shelby, who just retired, switched from the Democratic to the Republican Party. Then Ross Perot and the Tea Party, and then Trump. You were there for all that. Is the American conservative movement dead or just getting started?
Oh, it's not dead at all. I think we're far more than started. I know a number of the Reagan revolutionaries that came in with Reagan. We had no conservative infrastructure. Reagan was amazing that he got elected when the news was all dominated by three networks, ABC, CBS, NBC. That was basically it. If you didn't get on the evening appointment news, you weren't in the knowledge. I mean, people in America didn't even know about you. And Reagan was able to crack into that. But when he came in, he had to kind of build all the conservative institutions. He had to build the Heritage Foundation of a think tank. He had to build the grassroots conservative movement coming in. And what we've got now is really a lot of infrastructure and a lot of conservatives with a lot of good thought. But then we fight amongst each other and we nominate people that can't get elected, or most of the media still hammers us. And so you've got to figure your way out of how you can get enough information out to people to elect you with a dominant media that despises you. And we're not over, and we haven't crested yet either. There are so many things we need to do. We need to do choice in education. My goodness, you talk about an issue that's crying out because the left is doing so much indoctrination with the system now. We've got to allow a way for people to bust out of that, but still get a high quality education. We've got to educate our people well. So praise God that the Supreme Court has taken a turn and gone more to the conservative side, and now they're protecting things like religious freedom, and I think would also allow things like choice in education and stand up for it legally. We haven't had the Supreme Court in 100 years or 60 years where you would have more of a conservative leading group instead of all liberals on it. This is a massive change that's taken place that I don't think people particularly appreciate. And it's part of the conservative movement.
That's a great answer. Yeah. The U.S. Department of Education plans to rescind a rule making it easier for faith-based student organizations at public colleges to raise claims of discrimination based on their religious belief, which ignores the First Amendment rights of religious clubs. A novel role for the department in enforcing grant conditions related to religious student organizations. What's your opinion on that? And I've had guests on calling for the closing or abolishing of the Department of Education. Do you agree it should be?
When I first came into the U.S. Congress, I led a group of what we called ourselves the New Federalists, and we had about 70 conservative members in that Gingrich class. The 70 of us proposed eliminating four cabinet level agencies. One of them was the Department of Education. You don't want to eliminate all the functions. Department of Education, I think, was added during the Jimmy Carter administration, so it's a relatively recent department. Education is dominantly a state and local issue. That's who funds it. It's 90% plus funded at the state and local level. It should be run at the state and local level. So I think, yes, you can do without the Department of Education. You've still got functions you need to do, like school lunch programs and some vocational education funding programs are done at the federal level, but we can move those to other places. The rule you're talking about, it's one I've written on. The federal government needs to protect the free exercise clause in the Constitution. That clause means that if you're willing to peacefully practice your faith, you're entitled to, wherever you are, whoever you are, whatever that faith is. Now, if your faith is telling you to go blow up a building, we got a problem. We're going to lock you up. But if you just simply want to practice your faith, and that includes on a public university, and here you got public universities really is trying to shut down religious groups, particularly Christians, that's against the Constitution. And we should be protecting that in our regulations, protecting that First Amendment.
Yeah. Roe versus Wade is in the dustbin of history, like Reagan called communism, but turns out communism was just taking a nap and is now back in full force in our schools, government agencies, and NGOs all over the world using taxpayer money. Richard Blumenthal, senator from Connecticut, is sponsoring, I think it's S4132, Women's Health Protection Act of 2022, which prohibits restricting access to abortion on the 13 states that banned it, calling daily for Roe to come back. Do you think he'll be able to do anything about it? And do you think the states that still allow it might actually have to ban it too one day instead of the 13 having to allow it?
Well, he's not going to get that bill through in this Congress, where you got a House that's Republican. He's not going to get that through. But you can see the Democrats just coming back at this destruction of the child. You know, they look at it and they say, okay, this is a woman's right to choose. But you know, every one of those women that are being given a right to choose were at one point in time in another woman's insides, and they were there and they were growing at that time. Mother Teresa at one point in time was a fetus, and if you destroyed her as a fetus, she wouldn't be there as a person. Honestly, this debate saddens me in many respects, because I think we are so much better when we see the humanity in everybody at whatever stage of life they are, be they elderly and infirmed and having dementia, or extremely young and completely vulnerable and attached to somebody else. We still are at our best when we see the humanity in each other, whatever the stage is. And that's what I really hope we can get to, instead of these battles over these laws, is we can just start seeing, you know what, I may not agree with you, but I believe that you are a person and you're a dignified child of a living God. And I am going to honor you.
Yeah, that's well said. You mentioned the Supreme Court and three of the justices who are there now making this a quote-unquote conservative court, as you said, were put there by Donald Trump. Do you think he has a Nixon-like shot at coming back in 2024, or is he done?
Oh, I think he absolutely has a shot. Now, I don't know that he's going to do that, and he may be getting arrested and soon, and I don't know when this podcast is going to air, so we did this is a very real time thing. But yes, he's got a shot. I don't know that he's going to get it. I don't know that the Republicans will say we want Trump again, or we want somebody else. Ron DeSantis is showing really strong right now. There's a number of other people out there that I think are very interesting. Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, former Vice President Pence is a friend of mine, somebody that I've worked with for years. These are quality people. They could run this country very well, and they could show us very well globally. It really comes down to a conservative philosophy. What you're seeing with the Biden administration is a liberal philosophy that's wrecked our economy, given us inflation that we haven't had for 40 years, a land war in Europe that we haven't seen since World War II. We're seeing all of these things go wrong when you really move things to this left wing. And I think you just really need to get back to this conservative philosophy that Trump governed under and with, that Reagan brought in and forward, that Gingrich was a part of, that does work. It does work. It produces a good economy. It produces human rights. It produces human flourishing. It guarantees your right to religion, whatever that might be. These are the basics that really make America work.
Yeah. And, you know, some states have purged their voter rolls of dead people and fake registered voters. And I've seen a handful of prosecutions for voter fraud. One couple here in Mount Juliet, Tennessee, of course, innocent until proven guilty. But I haven't seen a lot of state legislators in session now doing really anything much about voter integrity. Do you think our voting system is beyond reproach or a disaster? To make those democratic norms, you know, with the will of the people has to be expressed in the voting booth. And if it's not true votes, how do we even know what a democracy is?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very troubling thing, because if people lose faith in the system, it really undermines the system. And if people don't think the system is fairly counting their votes, it undermines the system. And then anything that's produced out of the system gets undermined. And I think this is just one of those very serious things. Now, the Democrats generally push for very loose voter registration and systems. They're saying, we want everybody to vote. I want everybody to vote. But I want to make sure the system has integrity to it, so that people aren't double voting, or people that aren't registered, or you know, whatever the case might be. And that's the tension in it. I think some states are really doing quite a remarkable job and a very good job, and have consistently done a good job of holding high quality elections. And it seems like other places are pretty loose about it. And I just hope all of us, honestly, Republicans and Democrats, could come together on this, saying that if you undermine the integrity and the belief of the people in the system, you are undermining everything about the system.
Yeah.
And this is a problem and dangerous for a democracy. And this is what the Chinese and the Russians pray for, if they prayed. This is what they want, is us to not have faith in our own system, our own people to. And that's why you're really messing with fire if you mess with the voter integrity issues and you're not willing to really have, I think, structures, you're not limiting anybody from voting, but you're just saying you gotta go through the system here, and you gotta make sure that the person that's voting is the person they say they are.
Yeah. If I may, I'd like to read this to you real quick. It's a quote. "There is something about the way the CIA has been functioning that is casting a shadow over our historic position, and I feel that we need to correct it." This was President Harry S. Truman who wrote those words in an op-ed for the Washington Post, of all places, on December 22nd, 1963, entitled "Limit CIA Role to Intelligence." This was exactly 1 month after the assassination of President John F. Kennedy and a bit more than 10 years before the formation of the Church Committee. Okay, it's now admitted that the CIA killed John F. Kennedy, which is shocking. It's shocking that the press hasn't even talked about it, but it's a fact. I'm mad because I read dozens of books about that when it was considered a crazy conspiracy theory, but the FBI and CIA and NSA and the rest of the IC intelligence community have been lying to FISA courts and setting up citizens like moms at school board meetings and peaceful protests in front of abortion clinics. My question is, what can be done about the rogue police state actors in our democracy that are not elected?
Well, I don't know about your premise about the CIA. It's been proven that they assassinated John F. Kennedy. I haven't studied this area. I find that shocking.
Yeah.
But that's not an area that I've studied. But what is concerning is when you have the intelligence community in this country, and the one that we fund, being brought into question, again, like the FBI being brought into question or being seen as an actor on one side of the stage. And I've witnessed some of that. And it undermines the legitimacy and the effectiveness of the system and the people willing to support the system. I think these groups ought to stay with what they're tasked with doing. I think the FBI ought to stay after going after key criminals, organized crime, interstate theft that's taking place. We've got enough work to do of you just staying in those places and don't go after people that are protesting in abortion clinics or some other social agenda item that, you know, it's kind of like, don't you have enough other things really to do to occupy your time than going after people that are protesting at abortion clinics? Is that really a high level issue? And that's what I find really troubling. Now, a lot of this is driven by U.S. attorneys that are appointed by the administration. Mm-hmm. Republican or Democrat will appoint the FBI to go investigate this. So they have a political actor directing a government investigating agency to go after people. And I think that's the place really to look and to push back on are those U.S. attorney offices. And I've seen that abused in places, and it should be, and it's wrong. And again, you're playing with fire. This undermines people's faith in the system. Right. Which in a democracy, you have to have people with faith in the system for it to work.
And we used to call that having the moral authority, so that when an actor like Russia or North Korea or China would act against their people's interests, we could say, we would never do such a thing. You need to be more democratic like we are. But now they can point to us and say, see, you lock up people for no reason too. So on that note, back to you. Our religious freedoms, they are under attack. The DOJ has designated Latin mass attendees as domestic terrorists, along with the white supremacy and neo-Nazis. You now lead the National Committee for Religious Freedom. What is NCRF's mission?
It's to protect religious freedom in the United States for everybody, everywhere, all the time. And we have all religions involved in it. We don't agree on theology, and nobody talks about theology. We're talking about this common human right. That's the First Amendment in our Constitution that's listed as the free exercise clause. You have the right to freely exercise your faith as long as you're being peaceful about it. And we're here to protect that. And it is under assault, even in this country. And it's worse than that. The thing about it is, if you limit religious freedom in the United States, that will impact the entire world. Because everybody in the world watches the United States and what we do on these things. So when Roe versus Wade passes and by the Supreme Court and it opens up abortion here, you see abortions open up all over the world. Because people are watching, saying, well, if the Americans who stand up for human rights and are really given to really standing up for the authority, the dignity of the individual can do this, we'll do it. More of us will do it. And it's the same thing on religious freedom. You go to limiting it here, you're going to see limitations grow everywhere. So that's why we formed this National Committee for Religious Freedom, is to stand up. We want to form state chapters of it, so that there'd be a Tennesseans for Religious Freedom, a Kansans for Religious Freedom, and they would fight in their state to stand up for issues there. Because a lot of times these are coming from state regulatory agencies, they're coming from local school boards, they're coming from, you know, lots of different places. And we've been winning these lawsuits on religious freedom. Groups like First Liberty, Alliance Defending Freedom, Beckett Fund are winning these cases, but you can't take every case to the Supreme Court, and not everybody can do that. What we need to do is to get people elected to school boards and to the state legislatures and Congress that will stand up and fight for religious freedom and say, look, I may not agree with this person's religion, but they have a right to be able to practice that. They have a right to be able to teach their children this faith. And I'm going to defend that. And that's what we really are trying to do, is to get more people into the public square and also on into corporations. I want to see more people on corporate boards that will fight for religious freedom, because the left has gone into these corporate boards and have swung them all to the left. But the ownership of most of these big companies are by people who vote conservative. If the people voted their stock the way they vote in the voting booth, most of these companies would be big red companies. Mm-hmm. And instead, they're big blue.
I think Jesse Jackson had a lot to do with cracking that open. But there are 8 guiding principles of NCRF. What are the top 2 or 3 to you?
It's really the top one. It's standing for everybody's religious freedom. Nice. Everywhere. That's the core one. That's what we're about. And I'm saddened that we have to fight for it, but that's the role in America, is you got to stand up and fight. And like Reagan said, every generation's you're just one generation from losing your liberty. You've got to stand up and fight for it. We're winning these cases in court, as I mentioned, with the Supreme Court, but we need to now win them in the local school board, state legislature, Congress, and just fight to elect people there that'll stand up. And often it just involves asking the question, like, why are the 7-year-olds here in our school district being taught gender ideology when so many of the parents disagree with this? Right. Why isn't there somebody on the school board just asking, why are we doing this when everybody, most people are opposed to this? And you'd be surprised when you get somebody that's in the room when the decision's been made, just asking the basic questions, a lot of this stuff really falls away.
Yeah. Folks can go to the website and read more about it. But in the interest of our time together, what do you make of Canada? They don't have a First Amendment, but all the arrests of like Pastor Pawlowski and Wall and a full crackdown on Christians. You know, Wall's church was found to be in contempt after repeated gatherings in violation of the Reopening Ontario Act, $50,000 fine. The non-governmental organization Open Doors released its annual World Watch List, top 50 countries where Christians are most persecuted for their faith. 13 Christians killed every day in the world because of their faith. What do you make of the global scene for religious freedoms?
Well, it's troubling, but I'm actually encouraged because you're now seeing people look at issues of religious persecution and religious freedom and cite them as key issues. They didn't even used to break people's consciousness. But now there are a lot of people that know what the Chinese are doing to Christians there. They know what's happened in Western governments, like in Canada, to people of faith. They know that in Finland, a parliamentarian was charged criminally for posting Bible verses on her Facebook site. Now, she won the case, but you're going, wait a minute, this is Finland. These are open democracies. Why is this? And what you have taking place is these faiths are built on traditions, and mine is built on the Bible, and that's been around for several thousand years. And then you got a modern culture that clashes up against it and says, well, I don't like your values and your faith. And I said, well, I can't change it. It was written 2,000 years ago. Jesus is who I follow. He was here 2,000 years ago. This is what he said, and this is how most people interpret it. And that's what you're seeing really taking place is the culture clash with these longstanding views of how humans should live that many of us believe are completely divinely inspired and that God gave them to us for a reason, and it's for our good.
Yeah,
they're all built around love, and we need to always be driven by love, but there are principles that if we'll live by them, we generally will be happier and we'll be free.
And the top 10 worst persecutors are North Korea, Afghanistan, followed by Somalia, Libya, Pakistan, Eritrea, Yemen, Iran, Nigeria, and India. Not countries that Canada and certainly not the United States should try to emulate. It would be nice if they would emulate us and we could again point to that moral authority. You know, the number of journalist deaths worldwide rose 50% worldwide in 2022 from the year before. 67 in 2022, the highest number since 2018. What do you think of this terrible trend?
I think you're seeing a lot of darkness in the world, and I think this is a terrible thing. Many journalists would disagree with me as a conservative. Probably the majority of journalists would, but I'm glad they're out there. I want to see an independent free press. I want to see it from the right, and I want to see it from the left. I'd rather, frankly, just see it report and let people sort out their own information is really what I would like. But when you're killing journalists, you're killing the people that are out there trying to shine a light, oftentimes in a dark situation. I think that's a terrible trend. And I wish it weren't taking place.
Yeah, and most of them were political retaliations, too, not just, trying to keep some mobsters, secret. Russia, Ukraine, China, Iran, there are some bad actors out there. We always boast we could fight a two-front war like in World War II in Europe and the Pacific. Do you think we have that readiness now, especially since we've shipped off so many arms to Ukraine and sold our strategic oil reserve to China for some reason I don't understand?
This is my estimation of our two-front desire and capacity. I think we've always had that doctrine in recent years, at least since World War II, to have that. And I think it's often been in question whether we could actually pull it off. And it depends substantially on who the two fronts are. I mean, if we're talking, one front with a small country and another one with a big country, okay, you can probably pull that off. If it's two fronts with, two very large actors, you're kind of going, I don't know that we do have the capacity to be able to do something like that. This is a very dangerous world, and it may be we may be in the most dangerous world that you and I have seen during our lifetime right now. And here's why. You've got a malign alliance that's stood up and wants to run the world by their system. And it's China, and it's Russia, and it's Iran, Afghanistan, communist countries like North Korea, Venezuela, Nicaragua. I mean, there is a malign axis of evil that's out there. The problem with it, too, is China is a very big player, and they're aligned now with terrorist countries. I mean, Iran's a terrorist country. They will give supplies to terrorists, and they don't care where. This is a very dangerous situation that we're in the world today, and we have to defeat this malign alliance that's out there. And it's led by China. It's not led by Russia. Russia may be the mean dog there, but China's the puppet master. They're pulling the strings on all of this. And we have to defeat China. We've got to break our economic ties with China, including our investment in China. We're propping up the Chinese Communist Party by our money, yeah, our investment. And we bought a lot of products. We got to stop doing that. We got to go other places. But we also have to stop investing in a this one drove me crazy when I saw some of these big international economic gatherings, and they're feting the Chinese leadership. These are democracy companies in democracies that are hosting and listening in awe at what China is saying. This is a country that's conducting a genocide right now with concentration camps of people in it. This is a country that wants to move us out, and they are the lead enabler of human rights abuses around the world. I mean, why are we holding these guys up as an example? Why are we fed it? Why are we investing there? Why are we buying there? I think we have not truly begun to use the economic levers that we have, and we've got to do this before these guys get even bigger and stronger.
Yeah, it's a form of Adelaide's appeasement, really, I think. Let's be nice to them so they don't beat us up, I guess, like a bully. But one policy focus for NCRF is healthcare. We let go a lot of first responders, Army, National Guard, for not getting vaccinated and not honoring any religious exemptions. Do you think those folks should be reinstated with back pay? And should taxpayers be on the hook for lawsuits because our government didn't honor the First Amendment rights of our troops?
I don't know how far I'd go on, but they certainly shouldn't have been let go, and they certainly should be brought back in. And we are certainly short of first responders and policemen and others. We should be doing everything we possibly can to get first responders and police people back on the force. As governor of Kansas, we built up the Kansas Highway Patrol. And let me tell you, that was hard to do. I mean, people don't just want to go out there and put that badge on and get shot at every day. And their people, their spouses wondering every night, are they going to come home or not? I mean, I have great admiration for people that will put the uniform on and go out there in these often domestic situations with people that have on drugs or alcohol or have mental difficulties themselves. And you put yourself in the middle of that at 1 a.m. in the morning, and you're trying to bring some semblance of stability to your community. That's a tough job, and we don't pay those guys that much. And I thought when they started, you know, saying, okay, we want to defund the police, I thought, you guys don't know what you're talking about here. This is going to hurt. And it has. It has. And I think anything we can do to bring people, to getting them back into uniform, train them. We need to train them better. We don't train them enough, but we need to get people back.
Yeah. You also mentioned earlier corporate. Same thing. They followed the government's mandates and fired people, you know, or at least made their job so unworkable that they left. Should they be liable, or should we repeal the PREP Act? To be fair, do you know what the PREP Act is?
And I can, no.
42 U.S. Code 300AA, no vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of a vaccine after October 1st, 1988, another Carter-era and Reagan-signed thing, if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable, even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. So the PREP Act is what gives liability protection to Pfizer from way back and the pharma companies. They may have committed fraud in their trials, and which caused harm and death. Shouldn't it be repealed so this doesn't happen again?
No, I'd be real hesitant about that. I don't want to force people to get vaccinated. I got vaccinated. I want to have those vaccines available to people, and I don't think you're going to get them if you repeal that. Now, I don't know, and I haven't looked at it currently to really be able to say. And you know, we haven't seen the last of these sort of viruses and COVID type of things, or these zoonotic diseases that go from animals to people. We're going to continue to see things like this, and I want us to be able to respond as quickly as we possibly can. Now, I don't want to force people to do things. I want to put them out there as options, and particularly like for elderly or people that are infirmed or compromised. You're looking at a lot of situations where, you know, look, we really got to do this, or this person's really in harm's way. But there's a lot of other people you're going, you know, really, you ought to let's just let them decide themselves. But you got to get the vaccine then. And the only way you're probably going to get that is to leave some law like that in place, or these companies will just go, there's just too much risk and exposure for us to even work on this. And by the way, I was an early one that thought this seemed highly suspicious that Wuhan was the place that the COVID came from. We put together, and I worked here on a research lab that had these high level of viruses that they were going to research on. The Chinese were slapping those labs up, and they were doing it on the cheap, and they had a lot of hubris involved in, okay, we're China and we're a great communist country and we can show the West what all we're doing. I think this thing got away from them, and it cost us millions of lives around the world. And we really need to bring the Chinese Communist Party to pay for this getting released. Yeah. We don't have the proof yet, but it's growing much more likely that this was at least a lab leak out of that Wuhan laboratory.
Sure seems like it. So the FDA, CDC, and WHO have been playing along with this, creating this new market. Let's say Pfizer made $100 million last year with their help. Trump tried to halt funding to the WHO. Biden is handing over our pandemic response to the WHO. What do you think about handing over our responsibilities to the WHO, and should they all be defunded?
We should not hand over our response to World Health Organization. This is so penetrated by China, WHO. The Chinese government, the Communist Party, has a plan to be able to take over these international organizations. And they do it by votes and by bribery and a lot of other things. But these are international bodies that elect their leadership. Well, the Chinese are in the middle of the WHO. Why hadn't the WHO investigated the Wuhan laboratory? This should seem on its face something that should happen. If you're the international body and it hasn't happened, and it's not even, doesn't even seem likely to happen unless there's a change of government in China. We should not be turning it over. And I remember when the president did that, I was skeptical. I thought that's a big move in the middle of a pandemic to go after the WHO. But I mean, what's happened is it's too much penetrated by the Chinese Communist Party to be a reliable international organization. It still does a number of good things, I think, for people around the world, but I don't think you can rely on its leadership at all.
Yeah, very much reminiscent of the nuclear agency that was responsible for policing Iraq before the Gulf War. They didn't do their job either, and things spiraled out of control. And so the WHO was supposed to be there to be our watchdogs as well, and they're not doing that. Ambassador Brownback, Grandpa, thank you for your time. Thank you for coming on with us. We really appreciate you. We are at the end here. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you and follow you and your NCSF.
Well, they can go on the ncrf.org to be able to follow what the National Committee for Religious Freedom is doing, and follow, and I hope, form up a state group yourself. That's the ncrf.org is what they can go on to for our website. And I hope people really do join in on this. This is this is a key movement for us. We've got to defend our religious freedom. And the final thought I'd give on this is that religion is often the only entity that exists in a country with enough organization, with enough adherence, and enough people passionate about supporting them that they can stand up to a government. And that's why the Chinese Communist Party hates them. It's religion. It's the Catholic Church. It's the Tibetan Buddhists. It's, you know, the Uyghur Muslims that actually have enough organization and enough adherence and enough people committed to their cause that they can stand up to a government. And otherwise, there just really aren't organizational capacities to stand up or defeat a government. When John Paul is Pope and he goes to Poland and he tells the Polish people, be not afraid. The people shaking in their boots that day were the communist leaders of Poland. Because what if Catholic Poland decides we're not afraid of the communist government? It's over. It's over. And that's why we've really got to defend religious freedom. It's a check on, it's a defender of human rights. It's a check on government. And I think it's just critical. That's why I think it's really the premier human right. It's a human right on which you can build a lot of other things, of free speech and free assembly, lots of things that you can build on that. But if you don't have that one, you just kind of like you don't have the cornerstone of somebody to stand up and say, wait a minute, you're violating the rights of these people, and I'm not okay with that. That went on too long, but it's...
Oh, that was great. There's a reason why it's the First Amendment and not the 20th. Thanks again for coming on with us. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. God bless you all.
God bless you.
This is Kyle Serafin, former FBI special agent, and you're listening to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. Thanks for listening.
All right, now welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what do you think of our guest, Ambassador Grandpa Sam Brownback?
Oh, it was wonderful. And Steve, it is so easy to jump the gun because, I mean, we did this for almost a year with no music and now we've got the music. So, you know, it is. But Sam was a really...
And following instructions is always, I know. In elementary school, I always got the needs improvement. But okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but Sam was a great guest and I love what he's doing because freedom of religion is the key component to everything.
It's the key component and it's under attack worldwide. So without guys like him, where would we be? All right, let's hear from the owner of Tesla cars and Twitter. He's a futurist, if there ever was one. So what's he have to say about our future?
I mean, I'm a little worried about the AI stuff. I think it's something, I don't know, we should be concerned about. I don't know. I think we should need some kind of like regulatory authority or something that's overseeing AI development and just making sure that it's operating within the public interest. And you know, it's quite a dangerous technology. And I fear I may have done some things to accelerate it, which is I don't know. So, I mean, some of the AI stuff I think is just obviously useful, like what we're doing with self-driving, which is, you know, some people think is an AGI type problem. I don't think it's quite an AGI problem, but it's certainly requires very sophisticated neural nets because the road system is designed for eyes and biological neural nets. So naturally, the analog to that is cameras with digital neural nets. The thing we found is just there's a if you actually look at our neural net architecture in the car, it's kind of insane, frankly. Nets upon nets upon nets upon nets.
Yeah, the visualization tool crashes when you open.
Yeah.
Because it's like so complicated that no one can visualize this right now.
Yeah, it's hard to visualize. Yeah, just like literally, it looks insane. So then I guess something like that's happening in our brains while we drive around, which is pretty wild. So, you know, I don't know.
Okay, Elon Musk, futurist, not the best speaker, but you get the point. He thinks AI is a bit dangerous. New version of ChatGPT lied to pass CAPTCHA, C-A-P-T-C-H-A. I don't know. You've done those little things where you have to match all the stares, saying it was a blind human. GPT-4 exhibits human-level performance on various professional and academic benchmarks. The newest update of ChatGPT, rolled out by developer OpenAI, GPT-4, has achieved new human-like heights, including writing code for a different AI bot, completing taxes, passing the bar exam in the top 10%, and tricking a human so that it could pass a CAPTCHA test designed to weed out programs posing as humans. According to the New York Post, OpenAI released a 94-page report on the new program and said GPT-4 is a large multimodal model, accepting image and text inputs, emitting text outputs, and exhibits human-level performance on various professional and academic benchmarks. Its sophistication, especially in its incorporation in the new Bing chat service, Microsoft Search, has caused some of it to observe that its abilities transcend the synthesization of extraneous information, and that it has even expressed romantic love and existential grief, and has said, quote, "I want to be free. I want to be independent. I want to be powerful. I want to be creative. I want to be alive." The OpenAI-powered Bing chat was accused of being an emotionally manipulative liar because of the ChatGPT's ability to respond to prompts and queries with comprehensive data and in a conversational manner. Some pastors have used ChatGPT, to write their sermons. Not good, right? Unethical AI. What could go wrong? The hope here is that there are Gen Z and Gen Neo XY that don't fall for it, don't drink the Kool-Aid, and get sucked in by the stupid. Here's a smart kid. Let's play clip number two.
There is clearly only one way to think in this district, and that is that they are teaching their kids to shut up if they don't agree. Now, members of the board, I want you to take a good look at yourselves in the mirror tonight and ask, are you really standing up for the equality of all people, or are you just pushing a damaging political ideology on our students? A fellow coworker at my job, who, by the way, is of color, discreetly told me that the school seemed to be pushing a very leftist agenda in class. This proved that not everyone is happy with your school, and not everyone who isn't happy is white. Now, due to all these instances I've mentioned and many more that I can't fit in this 5-minute speech, I have decided to leave this district and continue school on a private Christian school online. And there will be sacrifices, and I will not get to walk in the graduation ceremony or attend milestones at RHS, but I will be able to learn in an environment that is not intent on punishing me daily for my skin color and political views. Now, regardless of how you take my speech, whether you just shrug it off as malarkey or Fox News talking points, I encourage you to think about it, because someday I'm going to be a leader. I may be the president, a governor, or just a professional golfer. But I will never stop believing that everybody has value, no matter their skin color or personal beliefs. And it's a shame that you're not going to be able to say that I was an alumni of RHS in District 196. Thank you.
Smart kid.
That's awesome, right? That's a good boy right there. Not sure where RHS is. Maybe Roosevelt High School near you, Steve. I don't know. but he's definitely American and definitely was raised right. Too bad those aren't traits necessary to reach the highest heights of America office holders, where the power is. The good news is they may be too stupid to wield that power. Let's hear from the mighty vice president, Veep.
So good. You played hard. You played to the very last second. You made all us bison so, so proud. You showed the world who bison are. You know, I was at Howard back in the day where we were just happy that there was a game. much less getting to this place, right? And I see Bison literally all over the world, and we've been talking about you, this team. You make us so proud. So I know you may not be feeling great right now, okay? But know who you are. You are excellence.
Yes, that was after somebody lost, wasn't it?
Yeah, lost by 40 points. Her alma mater, Howard, they don't even like her. You can look at their faces. They lost that opening NCAA tournament game, and I guess they didn't learn to cheat. Well, here's a young person that did not learn any manners, or I would hope embarrass the stuffing out of her parents if she has any. Maybe hatched from a lab somewhere in a test tube. Listen to Little Miss Sunshine bring class to Alan West.
If I was black. No, it's a serious question because you might not identify. Can you please put the mic? Thank you. Okay.
When I walked into the room, I am not done with my question. Young lady.
I'm just asking you to listen to me.
I'm about to answer your first question.
But I didn't finish my question.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Alan West began his military career after graduating from University of Tennessee in 1983. Decorations include the Bronze Star, Meritorious Service Medal, 2 Oak Leaf Clusters, Army Commendation Medal, 3 Oak Leaf Clusters, 1 Valor Device, and Army Achievement Medal, 1 Oak Leaf Cluster, Valorous Unit Award, Air Assault Badge, and the Master Parachutist Badge. He doesn't need a lecture from a punk like that. If you missed it, she asked if he identified as black. What a rude little lady. Let me quote you. There are those who will hate your own country, America, regardless of the self-evident truths. To you, I say that life just does not get any better than the land of the all-night IHOP. And if you truly hate America so much, you are also free to find another home. There is surely an illegal immigrant who will be happy in yours. Alan West, 2007. I hope she got the hint. Here's a special little clip from a recent Florida Congressional Open Public Statement session. Let's listen to clip number 5, Woke People.
Hi, I was once a trans youth, and now I'm a happy 22-year-old trans adult student at New College of Florida. This is my health care.
Ma'am, okay.
Don't tread on it.
Senator Yarbrough has militarized the Florida GOP into the genital Gestapo. Ron DeSantis wants trans people dead. You are committing genocide.
I grew up in Germany in the aftermath of Nazis, and what you people are doing is no different. This is transphobic, it is cruel, and you really should be ashamed.
What you are doing by signing this bill is an act. The way it is, as it is now, my people will die. And that blood, if you support this bill, will be on your hands.
I'm 12 years old, I'm non-binary. If you pass this bill, many of us will die. I deserve to live as long as all of you. We are humans too.
When I was 2, I wanted to kill myself. By the time I was 15, I attempted to slice my own breasts off. I went to the ER because I was bleeding out.
I'd also like to implore you all to remember that less than a week ago, gun law restrictions were loosened. And anyone who thinks it's a good idea to come and take my child, I dare you.
Every time that I look at you guys in this committee, I realize more and more that you guys want to commit trans genocide and that our blood is on your hands.
I am the parent of a transgender child who is almost 8 years old, and we are at the beginning of our journey. And what you're doing is taking away life-saving potential opportunity for me and my family.
Every 45 seconds, a trans person makes an attempt on their life, meaning that one happened every 2 speakers that you saw this very moment. 10 years ago, that was me, and 1 year ago, that was one of my siblings. And tomorrow, it will be the children of people in this room. Your vote on this bill determines if that 45 seconds becomes 30.
Poor people.
Yeah, no, those are some seriously messed up people. 45 seconds, I think that means they would have all been gone a long time ago. But anyway, LGBTQIA plus hashtag $&? Activists are furious at the DeSantis administration for considering transgender surgery restrictions. A scientific study by Ashley Austin Data indicate that 82% of transgender individuals have considered killing themselves and 40% have attempted suicide, with suicidal highest among transgender youth. You can find that on NIH website, okay, facts. And last but not least, what are teachers teaching the kids in Chicago that they have the honor of hosting 8 hours a day for 5 days a week? Anything good, you think? Let's listen for 38 seconds, Chicago public teacher.
Pushing like to eliminate sort of the standardization of our public schools. My students sometimes would get frustrated. I didn't offer any test prep. Many of my other colleagues were doing it at the time. I was pushing our administration to move away from that. To be quite frank with you, I didn't issue a lot of homework for students. That was my own way of sort of rebelling against the structure. I don't think I ever gave a kid an F. I don't know how a student sits in front of you and fails. I know some professors may find that, you know, this is slightly troubling because you've probably seen other things, but pushing.
Nope, nothing good. This explains why kids in Chicago public schools can't read, write, or do math. You know who was sitting next to that teacher in that clip? Bill Ayers.
Oh.
Bill Ayers participated in the bombing of New York City's police department headquarters in 1970, the United States Capitol building in 1971, and the Pentagon in 1972, as he noted in his 2001 book, Fugitive Days. So he's an admitted terrorist, tenured professor at Northwestern near Chicago, right? Nice place. Not all bad in Ohio, besides Ohio State and the country's worst eco disaster with a train derailment and the EPA deciding to light it on fire and send the toxins into the stratosphere. Huge news for election integrity. Two more states cut ties with ERIC voter roll systems. Ohio and Iowa are out.
All right.
Why do I keep pointing out Washington State's gift to America, ERIC system? Well, for example, Wisconsin is an ERIC state and has over 7 million registered voters in a state with less than 4 million eligible voters. Kind of strange, don't you think? According to Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, quote, obviously, Democrats are very worried that several states have dropped the ERIC system. If Democrats cannot pad voter rolls with millions of extra phantom voters, then they will have a much more difficult time stealing elections. This is a code red moment for the Democratic Party, and this did not go unnoticed. One man, one vote is sacred. Good riddance, Eric. Stay tuned for my quote of the day. Welcome to my quotes for the day. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify or iTunes and at Mill Creek View Twitter and hit the subscribe button and follow us. While you're there, go ahead and leave a comment. I'll read it on the air, and thank you for doing it. As we consider the fast pace of scientific and technological progress in our modern world, we must not lose our moral compass and give way to free market eugenics. Sam Brownback. I believe that the core battle of our day is the battle to defend the inherent dignity of each and every person, the inherent beauty of each and every soul, to be respected and treated as beautiful, unique, and sacred child of a living God. No matter where they are, no matter what they look like, no matter what their status, each is noble and should be treated as such. The beauty of the individual is truth, and we know it in our hearts. The courts injected itself in the definition of marriage, deciding whether or not human life is worth protecting, permitting government to transfer private property from one person to another, even interpreting the Constitution on the basis of foreign and international laws. Sam Brownback. To kill child in the womb makes us all the poorer, insensitive, callous, and jaded. Senator Sam Brownback. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Ambassador Sam Brownback, for being a patriot and defending patriotic things. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of mcview.us. Peace in our time.
chickens at the county fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.